Beautiful. Well, before we kind of jump into the story, one of the things I've loved personally about your work, I'm a big Ali fan, Muhammad Ali, and you've been one of the great writers of our time about him, and also just boxing in general. What were your fondest memories of Ali and getting, you know, to know him in your time, you know, watching him?
Well, you know, he of course made my career. there's no question of that. I was 25, whatever I was, on the Sports Night writing some feature stories here and there. And when Cassius Clay challenged Sonny Liston for the title, the New York Times' real boxing writer didn't think the trip was worth his time. The one round knockout. And he said, I remember he said, you know, go send the kid. He's not doing anything. and I was with the kid, and it was great. And, you know, the first day that I met him, it was in company of the Beatles. So, I mean, from the very first moment of glimpsing him in the flesh, that was February of 64, it was just a wonderful ride. And I just remember that whole week leading up to the fight, I was hoping that he wouldn't be hurt too badly, because I'd like to get a chance to cover him again. So, well, of course, we know what happened. And he won. I became the boxing writer. And in those days, that assignment really meant covering him. Three years or so, became the columnist, and I've been happy ever since.
So cool. Well, looking at One Fat Summer, diving into something that's so, you know, personal and semi-autobiographical, what made you want to do that? You could have just, you know, kept writing, you know, fictional work. What made you dive into something? I mean, this was, you know, a decade after where you just were with Ali. I mean, you dived into your own world.
Right. Well, actually, it was, I had written a novel, a boxing novel called The Contender.
Mm-hmm.
That was my first young adult novel. And that did very well. And of course, you know, they said, they offered me a contract for the next book. And I kind of put it off and went back into journalism. But what had happened was, when I was 14 years old, and by then I knew I wanted to be a writer. I mean, what else was a fat kid going to do but hide in a corner and make up stories where young skinny guys died horribly? But it took 25 years to write that story about losing the weight that summer, because the emotions of being fat, being unhappy with my body, blah, blah, were just, you know, too close, too sensitive, too close to the surface. So I really had to change and grow as a writer before I could go back. But it was something I always wanted to do. I mean, it's something that called me to it, which is really interesting, because the screenwriter, the guy who wrote the screenplay, David Spierce, he had read that book when he was in middle school, and he had always wanted to make a movie out of it. And of course, it took him many years, and he had to have a success of some other kind with a movie called A Single Man before he was able to shop it and sell it. So I think that it's something that kind of gnaws at you. You know, you've had an experience that you found, you know, transporting or powerful, whatever, and the question is, how are you going to contain it, box it, translate it? And that's really kind of what happened. I just so many years I wanted to deal with those emotions. And what had happened was a magazine called Mother Jones had started, and they asked various writers for the books that had had impact on them when they were young. So I wrote in the list, and I mentioned that, you know, when I was 13, 14 years old, I was a very avid reader because I was locked in the prison of my fat. And, you know, I never really thought of it that way, that it was a prison of my fat. And once I wrote that, I suddenly saw a way to write One Fat Summer. But now I'm, you know, now I'm in my late 30s. I have kids. But it just kind of appeared full blown that the way to write that story was just to write pretty much what happened.
So looking at what happened, I know there's obviously some fictionalized, you know, things about the character. I mean, like you don't have a sister, for instance, but one of the things I've always been fascinated...
Of course I have a sister.
Yeah, yeah.
She's 7 years younger than I am.
But also you had... Dr. Kahn was a real person, too.
Yes, he was. And have you seen the movie?
Yes, yeah.
In real life and in One Fat Summer, Dr. Kahn is a nasty old man from beginning to end. Donald Sutherland is not a nasty old man. He's kind of, you know, wise and charming in his way. So, I mean, there have been a lot of fictionalizations along the way.
Is it... How did you cope with what was real and what wasn't? I mean, obviously you're writing this, like you said, as a parent later in life. I mean, was it cathartic or was it a different feeling when you wrote it?
I loved writing that book. Yeah, I guess it was. I don't, you know, cathartic. I'm not sure that it was really cathartic so much as that I had this strange feeling that I was repaying a debt to myself, to my 14-year-old self. I mean, I did lose something like 40 pounds that summer. Exactly how much, it's true, I don't know, because I never let the scale get up to 200. But that part of it was absolutely real. The emotions that I felt, the way I ate like a pig, was all true. Some of the other things, the relationship of my parents was not true. My sister, that was not true. The girl, Joni, whose nose was fixed, was really a composite of two girls. And the bullies were much, much rougher in the book than they were in real life. And much rougher than they were in the film.
How much time did you get to spend with David in his process, or did he come to you with the fully realized screenplay?
The truth is, Scotty, I had nothing to do with the film. The only thing I have to do with the film is, you know, I'm going to be doing Q&As. I've done one already at film clubs. But he called me up out of the blue, David, and he wondered if the rights were available. As a matter of fact, they kind of were, because somebody who had optioned it for a long time had kind of dropped out, and so suddenly the rights were available again. He took that option, and on spec, he wrote the film. He showed it to me, which I thought was unnecessary, but really nice, and I liked it a lot. I mean, the big thing that he did, and he did a number of big things. One, he moved the story from the 1950s to the 1970s. So immediately we have better music. So he did that. And I think that he also brought a... 21st century sensibility to it all. In many ways, the film is closer to my sensibilities now than the way they were when I wrote the book. I mean, certainly in terms of, you know, the openness and the compassion in the movie, the thing, you know, people can reconcile, people turn out better than you think. I think he did a masterful job. I like the film a lot, by the way.
How much do you like Blake's, I mean, basically portrayal of you? I mean, I know it's not, but I mean, I think that's got to be something nice to see a young actor tackling your life story. What did you think of his performance as you?
I kind of loved it, and you know what I love most about it? I'm going to get to meet him sometime next week. I don't know quite how I'm going to approach telling him this, but I really like his unself-consciousness. At the end of the movie, without losing any weight, or I could see, you know, he takes his shirt off and, you know, dives off the high board, something I never would have done that summer. And I thought it was just kind of wonderful and thrilling, both as a character and as an actor, a brave actor, that he was so willing to be so unself-conscious, so comfortable in his skin. And I felt very envious. I mean, I wish back when I was 14, I could have been that happy with my body.
You know, you extended this story. I mean, you gave us more into the life. How much of the other sequels was autobiographical, or by then had the character taken off in The Summer Rules and The Summer Boy?
The core of it was always semi-autobiographical. In Summer Rules, he's a camp counselor. 16, he's just starting to come into his sexuality. And in The Summer Boy, he's 18, and he's driving a laundry truck, which I did. And he's getting involved with the unionization, or at least the standing up for their rights of the women inside the laundry. And so all those things were, you know, highly fictionalized. The second books were even more fictionalized than the first. But the core of it, you know, my own experience. I've written 12 young adult novels, and the three summer books were really the closest to my life.
This might be a kind of a crazy question, but has being a parent impacted your YA novels, or has being a YA novel writer helped being a parent?
Boy, that's an interesting question no one's ever asked. I wrote my first YA novel about a black kid who becomes a not very good boxer in Harlem just before I became a parent. When I wrote One Fast Summer, of course, I had two small kids. So I think that my work certainly became less journalistic. My fiction became less journalistic once I had kids of my own. And then later on, as you know, I had this dual careers as a journalist and as a YA writer. I think that as I had, you know, kids at home growing into adolescence, who certainly gave me information, critiqued my work, and, you know, kind of shrank in a kind of combination of pride and horror when I you know, went to their schools, because it turns out their schools were reading some of my books. So it really flowed back and forth. That's a good point. It really flowed back and forth between the two. Now I have grandchildren, and so I could restart my career.
That'd be awesome, Robert. You know, you talk about your career. We just talked about The Contender to start with. It's 50th anniversary this year, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, it's been out for 50 years. They did a new cover. That's been kind of great. And in the spring, I teach at Wake Forest, North Carolina, and there's a middle school there that was reading The Contender And so that was a great, thrilling experience, one I've never had before, of being with kids, at-risk black kids who were reading the book and commenting about it and talking about it as if it was a real story that was going on in their lives. So that was kind of that, and Once That Summer becoming a movie, it was really kind of a closing of the circle. Probably my two biggest YA books.
I've got to ask, when you look for inspiration today as a writer, what do you look to? I mean, what inspires you today?
Well, I'm not writing much fiction these days. I'm really more doing more journalism than fiction. I think that, looking for inspiration, for a year or so, I felt very dreadful and uninspired. But I think that watching these kids in Parkland kind of come out of this horrible experience and organize and stand up has been kind of thrilling. That almost seems like a living YA novel in front of my eyes. I hope that other YA writers are writing about that. Films are being made to kind of extend and fill in that experience.
Well, to kind of complete the final question I've got, Robert, when looking at the movie, was there a scene that just rang completely true that, they captured exactly, or maybe not just one scene, just moments that captured the book completely?
Well, I think that Blake Cooper was terrific, and I think that his interaction with Donald Sutherland were kind of magical in a way, as that relationship grew and as they came to understand each other. I can't say that they caught the realism of my life or the book, because that's simply not true. They created another fictional realism that in many ways I thought was far more compassionate and sensitive and smarter than either my life or what I had written. I think, in a sense of the way Blake Cooper grew his character, Bobby Marks grew in his self-esteem and his confidence and his understanding that he could do this job, which at the beginning of the film he was hardly suited for, and in somewhere along the way he kind of brought the Donald Sutherland character, the Dr. Kong character, out in a more humane way. I thought that was wonderful. So I think they really created something special that was not in my life or the book. That was the brilliance of the film, as far as capturing what was in the book. I think I really liked the Blake Cooper character. I really liked that combination of a bit of a smart ass, a little shy, and understanding that ultimately standing up to the bully is great, but sometimes you just have to suck it up and take it. And he did all that.
So cool. Robert, well, thank you for the time. It was a real pleasure. Big fan of your work, and like I said, I'm a big boxing fan, so I've been reading you my whole life, so thank you for everything you've done.
Who do you like? I find it very hard to find any boxers these days I can get attached to.
Modern ones?
Right now.
I'm kind of interested about the British heavyweight. I want to see if he can kind of keep momentum. Kind of the interesting. He's huge, so I'm. It's nice to have like a Lennox Lewis size guy back in the fold. But I think we need another I don't know, great American.
I agree with you, but you have to be convinced of just, you know, British, you know, British fighter was always an oxymoron in my time. Well, thank you for this. That was a fun interview. I enjoyed it.
Well, Robert, have a wonderful day. I know.